Post Film Review. I'm John Asquith.
And I'm Matt Stevenson. On this bonus episode of the Pre-Post Film Review, we are going to be reviewing Brad Bird's brand new Incredibles film, the sequel that we kind of thought we probably would never get, I guess, John. And given that we both love the original film, I think we're both pretty amped for this one to see what he'd come up with and sort of see if this is a return to form after stumbling a little bit with Tomorrowland, perhaps. So I am very curious to hear what you think. But before we jump into a full review of Incredibles, there was, as is now tradition with these Pixar films, and I think Disney films in general, at least their animated films, there was a short that played in front of the film. This one was called Bow, and I am really interested to hear what you thought of the little short, John. Did you like it?
I did. Let me just have a little disclaimer here on the potty as well. The sort of hammer, if you guys can hear like hammering and drills and stuff in the background, it's not me constructing a really well thought out, you know, argument or point about the about the movie. It's the neighbors here are doing renovations, and I can't really tell them to stop.
Anything, it's distracting you from constructing eloquent.
Exactly. Yeah. So if I'm not very good in this episode, blame them, not me. But anyway, we'll chat about this short Bow. I thought this was a really sweet little short, and a really nice insight into a sort of Chinese immigrant, I think, experience, and different from the average Pixar short, which is a little more fantastical. I mean, this has a little Bow, you know, dumpling.
Yeah, it's pretty fantastical.
Yeah, it is. But it sort of like flips at the end, which I really liked. And I guess we should say, if you're listening to this episode, this is spoilers for everything from here on, you know.
Very good
for
point.
The short,
yep.
And for the feature. I really liked at the end how it flipped, and then you realize that this is sort of some metaphor for what the director, I'm assuming, has sort of gone through. So I was really touched by it, actually. I found, you know, it's only, you know, however long, 5 minutes or something, but it tells quite an emotional and complete story, and I found myself getting emotionally invested in it despite the short runtime. And it looked amazing too. I really loved the design and the music. It was, of course, like just crafted really well. What did you think of it, Matt? Did you hate it?
I hated it. No, I didn't hate it. I liked it as well. I agree with everything you said about the metaphor, and it's like a unique perspective into a culture that we don't usually see that much of in sort of film in general, but also animated film outside of, you know, anime and Asian produced films. Though at the same time, I found it fucking horrifying. John, like, genuinely unsettling.
Yeah.
I mean, even from the beginning, when just the idea that this piece of food came to life and she was just eating them, like, it was like this weird concept that was then still okay. And the way that she looks after the little Bow, while it's sort of sweet, the way she, like, repairs him by, like, shoving more meat into him. You know, it's like, metaphorically I get it, but it's like a bit weird. Yeah. And when he gets hit by the ball and his head's like all deformed, or and she like massages it, I don't know, there was something just inherently weird about all that.
And
then, as you said, there's that one moment at the end, or towards the end, where she literally eats him. She eats the baby. And I, like,
that
my jaw dropped. I genuinely found it horrifying. It was, and I mean, I actually kind of, in the moment, disliked it, I think, because it was such a shock. And I kind of, it sort of broke the logic to me of the whole film. But retrospectively, I've kind of appreciate one that it like was willing to go there. Though I've heard a lot of people subsequently talk about how they don't find that a shocking moment and it's like a sweet moment, which I find baffling. So perhaps it wasn't intentionally meant to be shocking.
I think the people saying that eat their kids.
Yeah, exactly. They are literal cannibals. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, retrospectively, I kind of give it props and appreciate that it was willing to do that, like to have a shocking moment like that in this weird little sweet film. And like you said, the metaphor of it all kind of works in the end. But
yeah, it's as very I said, odd. Retroactively, you appreciate it a little bit, which I like. It's like it's not a twist, but it's sort of finally everything clicks into place in that last sequence where the actual son sort of comes back.
Yeah.
I did wonder though when she ate her son ate the dumpling.
Ate the baby.
Were baby we going to get a scene where she sits on the toilet and it comes back out?
Oh my god.
I didn't really think it was going to happen, but a part of me was like, is this really it?
My god, that would have been incredible if that's just how it ended. Yeah. With
yeah. The movie's called Dump.
I would have loved that. That would have been incredible.
Yeah, that would have been a different time, I guess. Yeah, I thought it was cool. As I said, I liked that it was a little different than your average, like, you know, animal or, you know, object that's come to life. I mean, it is another object that's come to life, but it's a little more intertwined with, like, everyday sort of life and different cultures. So,
yeah. Cool. Yeah, I agree. All right. Well, then, moving on to the film itself. What did you think of Incredibles?
Yeah.
Perhaps maybe just like give us a quick little recap of how you felt about the first film and then let us know what you thought of the sequel.
Sure. And again, I apologize to everyone for Mr. Incredibles fucking fighting someone outside there and there's lots of banging and crashing. So just think of it
right
as...
Right on cue there, yeah.
Yeah, right on cue. Think of it as atmosphere, you know? Imagine me sitting with a hard hat on and a shiny fluoro vest and you'll get the idea. Anyway, as you said, I really, really love the first Incredibles. It's old now. It's an old movie now. But I still remember when it came out, it was a big deal that Pixar were doing a full feature about humans because they'd purposely not done a lot of that. They were sort of worried about using 3D animation to depict, fully human characters because they didn't want it to look sort of Uncanny Valley or the animation, if it still wasn't refined properly, it'd just look a bit stiff. And so they were a little wary of that, but they brought Brad Bird into the studio to purposely to sort of push them out of their comfort zone because they knew that he is sort of a director that likes to try new things and doesn't really return to what's familiar very often. And this is kind of the first time he's done it, I'd say, with the sequel. And I think they got exactly what they wanted from him the first time around, which was a more grown-up Pixar film. And comic book movies were definitely a thing then, but certainly not like now with all this Marvel MCU stuff, and it was a really sort of novel, unique approach to the world of comic books and superheroes, and how that, you know, what putting them in a slightly realistic world in the terms of that there was a golden age and now it's over and they've had to go into hiding, and I think that's a really cool angle rather than just they're there and they're in it and there's a bad guy and a good guy, which is usually what we get. And the family dynamics, and there was sort of a little bit of commentary about the roles that people play in a family what makes people special and unique and all that stuff mixed together really well. And it was fun, had a great score, great action, great design, this kind of retro future world. So I have always loved, yeah, that first film and never felt the need for there to be another. And for a long time, Brad Bird seemingly felt the same way, but did always say, if I come up with an idea, then I'll do it. So I think it's a good sign that he waited this long. It would, you know, suggest to me that he did wait until he had an idea. The cynical side of me suggests, much like Andrew Stanton, that he had a bit of a live action flop and then went back to something he felt comfortable with. I don't know if that's true. Maybe like a small portion of it is, but he's so talented and obviously had this idea anyway that it's not like a full sort of cynical retreat back to what he knows. So I was excited for this. I wasn't like jumping up and down excited because I was still a little hesitant because I love the first film so much, whether we needed this or not. So after that sort of preamble, I would say I really, really liked this film. I think it's probably as good as an incredible sequel could be. I had a lot of fun with it. There's some, you know, minor sort of social commentary and stuff in there, which I enjoyed. I think the action's great. It looks good, of course. I like the expansion of the world, and we're sort of in a more of a city this time, which is cool. And just from a design perspective, again, like that retro futuristic sort of, it's like what people in the 60s imagined the future would be like, which I just love that aesthetic. I think there's some problems with the story, and it feels almost a little too similar to the first film, but with some roles reversed slightly. Not enough to make me, you know, be annoyed or angry at the film or anything like that, or not enjoy it, but enough that I was sitting there noticing some similarities. So yeah, I had a really good time with it. And we'll sort of get into specifics. Do I think it needs to exist? No. But if it does exist, we live in the universe where it does exist, I think this is probably as good as it could be, which sounds very lukewarm. I really enjoyed it, but the first one is just so unique and special to me that it's hard to get too excited about this one, even though it's very, very well made. So that's sort of my rambling initial thoughts, Matt. What do you think?
In response to your comments about the first film, I sort of felt the same way when it came out. I loved it and I watched it many times, but I sort of hadn't seen it in quite a few years, and it sort of slipped down my list of favourite Pixar films. I mean, not far, it was still in the conversation for the sort of top few, but yeah, things like Inside Out kind of eclipsed it a little bit for me. But before seeing Incredibles 2, I popped the original Incredibles back on and watched it maybe a day or two before I saw the new one. And man, is it good. Like, I mean, it is so good. And like, good enough to be, if not my favourite, then like, right, just vying for it with Inside Out, I think, probably. And like, potentially, I think it's the best, or at least one of, with perhaps like The Dark Knight, the best superhero film made. Like, it's just stunning.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
It is so fun, but it is so smart. And like you said, the way that it not only comments on like the roles within the family, like it uses the powers as metaphors for them in really smart ways. Like, nothing is wasted. And the action is so kinetic and so fun and interesting, and the way they use the powers is so fun and unique. Like, it's just amazing. And it takes its time too. Like, that retro future vibe, and it kind of has this like Bond soundtrack-esque score to it. And it's just like,
oh, the score's awesome. Yeah,
it's so good. And it just breathes more than a quote-unquote family kids film, you know, should. You know what I mean? Like, it just takes its time to have these long establishing shots, and you kind of sit with Mr. Incredible as he goes on this journey to the island over and over. And just the, like, I guess what you said they achieved by bringing Brad Bird on board was that's making it slightly more mature. Like, there's a genuine sense of danger and peril. You know, you think people are going to die at certain points. It's utterly thrilling and so much fun. I loved it. So, like, coming off the back of that, the bar was very high for me walking into Incredibles 2. And perhaps that was not the smartest idea, because I feel like we'll slightly disagree here, and I felt that it was perhaps like mid to low tier Pixar. Like, I was pretty disappointed with Incredibles 2. I didn't hate it, and I had like fun with certain aspects of it, but overall I felt like I came out of it with my cynical hat on a little bit, and it was, he came crawling back to a franchise after Tomorrowland, and it wasn't an idea that he'd waited years to make, because it just didn't feel that fleshed out. Like, some of the things that you mentioned, the first one is so tight and so punchy, and everything matters, and it's everything is there for both a narrative reason and a metaphorical, like, thematic reason. Whereas here, like, there's some interesting stuff, but none of it feels very well developed. Some of it's a bit muddled. I mean, it looks incredible, but I didn't think the action was as good as the first. Anyway, I guess we can get into some specifics in a minute. But yeah, I mean, overall, I had an okay time. I didn't hate the film, and there was cool moments. I enjoyed much of it, but it certainly didn't reach the heights of the first film for me. And like I said, it's probably mid to lower tier Pixar. I think.
Yeah, I think we are probably closer in opinion than it seems. Perhaps you're slightly more negative than me. I'm curious to hear what your thought, like, what were the biggest problems then, do you think, with this?
I think, like I said, some of the, just the, I was disappointed that the ideas were underdeveloped. I think the concept of sort of like switching the leads to make Elastigirl be the big protagonist and Mr. Incredible be the one that stuck it, I think that's smart. That's good. I think that was a good, like, jumping off point. If you go, even if it's familiar, like, at least it feels timely and like, I don't know, a good subject to be tackling to begin with. But it still felt like I almost preferred the Mr. Incredible stuff. Maybe it's because I didn't think the action was quite as, still there's some exciting set pieces, but it wasn't as inventive, or it wasn't as meaningful. Maybe the way the action scenes in the first film were such amazing representations of their powers and what their inner struggles were, that I didn't feel that in this film. There was some, like, like the train chase set piece was quite cool, but it was nothing more than like a cool set piece. Though, also, just on a weird side note, I've always had like a slight problem with Elastigirl's. Like, it's just a little bit gross. Like, she can stretch so, I don't quite know where the limits of her stretchiness are. Like, she seems like infinitely stretchable. Like, how, what does that do to her organs inside her? Like, it's,
I was thinking that too. She really stretches them in this film in particular. Yeah. There's a couple of moments where it's like, that must be really painful.
Totally. And there was like, I mean, it comes quite close. I mean, these are almost positives too, because I like that they touch on this stuff. I thought it came really close to sort of dealing with some interesting themes about commercialism and the way people are like obsessed with screens and all, like, because the way the supervillain kind of like hypnotizes them and with all these screens.
Yeah, there was definitely some stuff in there.
I feel like it never sort of goes any further than that. Like,
it abandons it at the end.
Yeah, and it's without doing that, it comes off with it, like, without backing up that or coming to any conclusion. It sort of felt a little bit hypocritical to even bring that up. It's like, you're a fucking mass entertainment movie I am watching on a screen, but you're criticizing everyone for not giving me an answer to that, or like intelligent discussion about it or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that I can totally see why that frustrates you. That was what intrigued me, but I agree that it wasn't. I didn't go far enough, and it's a little like Brad Bird, like sprinkling the, you know, pepper and salt over the top of it, sort of thing. But what is there? It's almost like Tomorrowland, where there's these really interesting ideas and these things that he's sort of trying to say, but it never quite comes together. And so in Tomorrowland, it's like we need to be less cynical. We need to look forward to like a positive vision of tomorrow rather than this constant, you know, post-apocalyptic, you know, negative stuff. Because we will create a world that we keep sort of talking about. And if we keep talking about how it's going to be shit, then it will be shit.
Yeah.
That's interesting to say, but the movie, that was very muddied in the movie.
Yeah.
And I think we kind of get that again. So I don't know, it's fascinating to me because Brad Bird likes to think about that stuff and talk, sort of comment on what we're doing as a culture and, you know, as a species in a lot of his films, or just talk about creativity or you know, bigger themes than we're sort of used to in a lot of these films. And so I really appreciate that. But because they're there and you want more, you know? And so when they don't come together, you kind of notice it more than if it wasn't there to begin with. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, totally. And I think it also suffered, like I said at the beginning, from me watching the first one and seeing him fucking nail that, like, perfectly.
Yeah.
And then it was very obvious to me that it was fumbled in this because of that, because of both those reasons. Like, because it was interesting when he brought it up and it was like the potential for something was there, and then I noticed that it wasn't.
Oh, well, yeah, there was one thing I wanted to touch on with that it's interesting that you said that it is a mass-produced, sort of hugely commercial film, but it's also sort of preaching it at its audience to, like, not be watching it.
Yeah.
And there is an interesting scene with... I wish I could remember the dialogue properly, but excuse the bulldozer outside. There's a Mrs. Incredible and the villain character who's... I can't remember her name, but they're having a chat at one point. Like, they've just had like a little like party to celebrate her Elastigirl's success, and they're sort of talking about that though the two of them are really running the show, you know, as women and stuff. And there's some interesting things in there. And then the villain says something like, "Well, I create all this stuff, and my brother just sells it." And they sort of have this discussion about who's more important.
Mm-hmm.
And Elastigirl says something like, "Well, I wish I could remember exactly. I don't know if she says more important, but she kind of sides with, or at least talks about the importance of having the brother there to sell. And she says, you need someone like that to get your stuff out there." This is totally paraphrasing. But to me, that was Brad Bird saying, "I know that this is Disney Pixar.
Yeah, interesting.
But I need them to, you know, to give my art out and to express what I'm trying to say." And so I thought, even though it doesn't all gel together, to me, that was him kind of saying, you know, I know, you know, the sort of contradiction that's going on here. And I found that pretty interesting.
That's a really interesting point. See, I do remember that scene. I remember quite disliking that scene, not in the sense that... particularly what the themes were, but it was just that it was very overtly verbalizing a lot of the themes that, again, that the first film never felt the need to do it, let the film speak for itself. But that's a very interesting reading of it, and I like that, but I kind of just wish the film had found a way narratively, or even, like, a great example of this is a film like La La Land, right, which is preaches about the importance of old cinema and old, like, it's not even preaching about old cinema, it's about jazz, but, like, about that, the way, a certain way to deal with nostalgia that's beneficial for the future, and it backs that argument up with the actual form and how they created the film and the look and the way it's shot and everything like that. So you come out of that understanding what that argument is. I would have liked, I mean, it doesn't have to be as artful as that, it could just be, you know, in the end, it's the villain and the it's they find a positive use for some of the screen, you know what I mean? So it like argues in some way that not all
right
screen consumption is evil. We can use it for a positive sense, like what I'm doing with this film, hint hint, you know what I mean, without saying
yeah.
that.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
I don't know, but I guess that's just an example of how it does. I feel like it didn't follow through with any of the stuff that it touched
yeah.
on. But then, like,
yeah.
playing devil's advocate as well, it's always better that it... I'd much prefer a film at least introduce these ideas than just be vacuous, you know? Like, I give it totally...
Yeah, well, that's...
Totally.
Exactly. That's sort of where I'm coming from. That it doesn't
yeah.
come together, but it's. I'm glad it's there, and I'm glad
yeah.
he puts that stuff in. And
yeah. Agreed.
It's, you know, if for audiences that want to engage with it, it's there, like, and we can discuss it. But also for, like, younger members of the audience or whatever, it kind of just washes over their head and they get, like, a fun
totally.
Superhero movie. And I appreciate that. Like I said at the start, like, this is the best Incredibles sequel we well, now that you're pointing out tears of the flaws, I think I do kind of think, though, this is the best it could be. Like, I, well... In the sense that I don't think we would get something that would top the original.
Yeah,
so,
fair enough. Yeah.
Yeah.
I do think, like, there was other little things that annoyed me. I guess it's moving slightly into more nitpicky territory. Perhaps we should get these sort of out of the way and then we can move back into something a bit more positive. But I think these sort of compounded stuff for me as well. Like, I thought it was very obvious who the villains... Well, to be fair,
yeah.
I guess I thought it was going to be, like, both of them, but, like, straight away, you
yeah,
know, it's
same.
Like,
yeah.
they're the villains. It's
and,
like...
and this was what I was talking about earlier, and that it kind of mirrors the first film a little bit. I didn't rewatch the first film like you did, so a little more hazy, but in that it's like, okay, someone who's rich and powerful has sort of faked a bunch of accidents
yeah.
or experiments to draw out, you know, it's almost like... Unbreakable
yeah.
as well, you know, to draw out these supers and promise them, you know, in the first one, it's promised Mr. Incredible that he can sort of make a comeback, and in this one, it's Elastigirl. And then it sort of flips and they're the mastermind the whole time
yeah.
and they have to fight against their boss, basically. That was a little too similar. If he ever does a third one, I think he cannot do that.
Yeah, totally.
Trope again.
Again,
but keep going.
No. I completely agree. And there was like a couple of little things I didn't like. One, weirdly, they seem to have like retconned Violet's powers. Like in the first film, she could just like make this bubble around herself, and like it was this. But the great thing about that is that they found these crazy ways to use it. Like there was like a hamster ball and all this like nutso stuff. Whereas in this one, she's like flinging these like weird like. Shields and things. I don't know. It was like very strange. I don't know. It just felt like they wanted it to be more like actiony or something. Anyway, that's not a big deal, but I just a little thing I thought was strange. But I didn't like her like plot device with the boyfriend. I mean, I think it could have been interesting exploring like that sort of teenagey social aspects to things. But I just thought the whole idea of her being so pissed off that he got his memory wiped just didn't make sense to me. Like, just reintroduce yourself. Like, there is no negative. She's just literally forgotten. So just say hi again. I don't know. Like, I don't understand why, like, she was meant to be so pissed off about that. Like, I don't know. It just really... I felt that very strange throughout the whole film.
Yeah.
Because it was a big plot. Like, that was her character arc for the film, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I guess she didn't know until like halfway through the movie, and so she's
no. Okay,
she
that's true.
He's just being weird or purposely ignoring her.
I guess.
And
yeah,
then she
right.
gets angry at her dad for not telling her that he had been sort of dobbed in.
Yes, I guess that's true. I'm making it sound more dramatic than it was, but I just found that an odd.
I agree in general, though, that I mean, I don't know. See, I keep going back and forth on this because. On the one hand, it is a very sort of teen story of, you know, you want someone to like you, or you're going to have this date. You're not sure if whether they like you back and stuff, and resetting his memory is kind of a way to just like reset that kind of dynamic, that high school dynamic,
yeah.
Which is cool. But then also it almost feels a bit too small and too limited for what they could have done. I don't know what they could have done instead, but it's it doesn't work quite as well as, say, you know, in the first movie where her powers reflect her being an adolescent, right?
Totally.
And putting a shield up of emotions.
And being invisible, like wanting to hide herself.
Wanting to hide, yeah.
Yeah, it's a shame they couldn't figure out a way to use those or use her newfound confidence or something in an interesting way with the powers. I don't know. It doesn't quite work. I agree. Similarly, Jack's stuff. Again, this film has like a tendency to just like say its themes. Like, it literally, Edna says Jack is nothing but potential, which is like, we got that from the first film, like when you saw all the potential things he could become, like that was his the metaphor for his place in the family, and she literally says it in this film. But I mean, he was quite fun. I really liked the stuff with him and Mr. Incredible for the most part. The one thing I didn't like was the bloody raccoon fight. What's the little dickhead from Ice Age or something, you know what I mean? It just felt like one of those like Looney Tunes cartoons. Like, it was just so cartoony and out of place. I don't know.
I had the exact same thoughts.
Yeah.
That the raccoon knew what was going on. And so in this universe, like, the animals are kind of self-aware. And I know that's a silly nitpick, but you know what I mean? Like, this is in the universe of cartoon animals that... It did feel like it came in from another short or something like that.
Though, you know? It's funny to hear you say that, right? Because the other little weird nitpick like that is that I didn't like was all the new supers that they introduced and their, like, weird monster animal forms. Like, what I really liked about the first one, it was so grounded and every superhero was just a person, and that whole montage about all the superheroes getting killed by their capes and things, they were, like, human. I don't know, it was... It felt very cartoony. It felt like it was suddenly part of a different universe, like you said. Or they just changed the rules suddenly in this one. I don't know. Mm.
Yeah, but it's mainly the owl guy, right? It's just like...
Yeah, I think so. Wasn't there one guy that's like...
Where did he come from?
Weirdly massive or something. Like, they just feel very cartoony.
Oh, there is like a really
cartoony.
Big guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, they're kind of pretty much the only sort of nitpicky things... Though I did actually, one other thing, the Underminer, where they sort of open with the closing of the last film. Like, what happened with him? He just, like, left
just
with all the money. He just won. He got what he wanted.
Yeah.
It's so weird.
Yeah, I thought that choice was, I'm not sure I can articulate why, but I didn't like that it began immediately.
Yeah, I agree,
when the first
actually.
Film ended. It just felt a bit off, and we know that time... Maybe it's because we know that time has passed in real life, and actually, this leads me to another thing I noticed, was that Craig T. Nelson, who plays Mr. Incredible, he sounds like an old man.
Oh, my God, I was going to...
There's hardly any energy to his voice.
Yep. It's weird. For a second, I thought they had just found someone different because he sounded so... Especially having watched the first one the day before, I was like, that is a different person. And he sounded old. Yeah, it was really weird.
Yeah. So that was a bit... I mean, you can't help that. That's just the aging process, and it's been so long since the first one. But...
Well, but I mean, you could lean into that if that's what you were going to do, and maybe that would have been more interesting, right? Like, have the parents older now, and
totally. And that's another reason not to set it directly after. Then,
yeah,
you know, like let's catch up with them and see where they are now. I suppose they wanted to keep the kids kind of roughly the same age, but it would be interesting to see Violet as in her like early 20s, and Jack's now Dash is now the teenager, and Jack's like 10 or something, but you know, whatever. I mean, that's a completely different film.
Yeah, and I guess less appealing perhaps for children, but yeah. I would have preferred that film. I like the sound of that film. All right, so to sort of change direction a little bit and perhaps get a little bit more positive, was there anything else that you really liked or anything you wanted to bring up that you thought was a positive aspect of the film? I feel like I've been quite negative.
I think the score is really good again. I mean, it's just a continuation of the first. I'm sure there's new themes in there. I didn't notice many of them, but the themes from the first are so good that it makes sense to bring everything back. And that really drives the sort of propulsiveness of the action scenes a lot. I really like that score. And from Michael Giacchino, he's a great composer. I did like, we sort of touched on this, I did like the action sequence with the runaway, you know.
Yeah, I think that's the standout of the film, right?
Train thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was really cool. And I liked the move that Miss Incredible kept doing where her like bike could like split in half.
Yeah.
And she could like sort of give herself like a push into the air and like
cool
jump over stuff. That was really cool. Yeah, that was probably the highlight for me in terms of the action. Yeah, like you said, the comedy of Mr. Incredible being at home and having to look after the kids, I thought that was all really good. And there's also some nice stuff in there of him struggling to not have all the attention and it being on his wife for a change. I thought that was that was really cool, and again, kind of timely, you know, that it's time
definitely
for someone like him or whatever to take just not a backseat, but just like you know, let someone else have a go, and let's just share, you know, our attention, and you know, if you want to say privilege, let's share that as well.
I completely agree.
Yeah, I thought that was good.
I think that's an example of it getting close to the first film in the sense that it's using or at least placing superheroes in a domestic situation that is interesting. You know, I mean, that's kind of like 90% of the first film, and this film forgets, like moves away from that for the most part. But I think that's why the Mr. Incredible stuff with Jack-Jack stuck with me. Was because of though it's a bit smaller and it's more it's more interested in
that's right that stuff does feel kind of directly tied to the first movie and it's the same kind of thematic area and
exactly.
Like low key, you know, quote unquote realistic sort of setting
and like you said feels super timely and just like really fascinating, like watching him struggle with like both literally struggle with the baby and like you said struggle with now his wife now being the loved superhero and him having to step back is much more interesting than, you know, watching, I don't know, a ship crash into a building at the end of the film. Well, for me anyway.
Yeah, totally. No, I agree. You know, and it's funny that brings up another point I had. I don't know how they could get around this, but having stuff like that in the movie and having it be fairly self-aware and commenting on sort of social changes of our time, to see executive produced by John Lasseter come up as like one of the first credits at the end felt weird to me. I know it kind of has to be there because legally, you know.
I'm sure most of the listeners know, but if you don't, he was accused of like some, you know, kind of gross sexual harassment and fostering this like boys culture at
it's
Pixar and... he's basically been given the flick, but it's a very slow transition out, unlike other people that have sort of been caught doing this for whatever reason. Disney and Pixar have been slow in acting, which is disappointing. And so it was, I don't know if I want to say the word disappointing, but it just didn't feel right to me to have his name at the end there. That whole thing is just awful and terrible because so many people looked up to him, myself included, as this pioneer of like this new form of animation and kind of bringing back the I don't know, mainstream appeal of animation in general and saving Disney. And he just fucked it. It just turned out to be real creep. And
real fucking creepo. Yeah, it's really unfortunate.
I don't know
that's a good point.
How long he'll be credited for, but hopefully not much longer. I mean, it sucks
surely
to say,
not,
but he just can't. He needs to go.
yeah, definitely.
So that was that was a bit weird.
Yeah,
but tangential to the film, I guess.
Yeah. Cool.
Well, let's end on something else.
Yeah, I know this feels like a dud note to end on. I mean, I guess we touched on this a little bit and talked about it in terms of the first film, but just again, the look, when you brought it up in the beginning, that retro futurism still looks awesome. And just in general, like, I mean, it seems a bit silly to say, but literally every single time Pixar makes a movie, I'm slightly blown away by how amazing the tech is. Like, it just looks amazing. Everything looks great.
Yeah.
And the design, specifically the design of these films, appeals to me. I really love the way they look and feel. It's really, really cool. Right, cool. So what do we like overall? You're slightly more positive. Would you say thumbs up from you?
I would say thumbs up. Yeah, I still think it's an enjoyable movie. Yep. I think there's some good action in there. There's some interesting thematic stuff which we've talked about a little bit. Doesn't quite come together in the end. Mm-hmm. And as I have said a couple of times, I kind of think, you know, this is as good as it could be. It's never going to get close to the original, and so I enjoyed it. Yeah, I didn't love it, but I really liked it quite a lot while I was in the theater. So it's a thumbs up from me, while recognizing sort of a lot of the issues that you have brought up, Matt.
Yeah, fair enough. It's probably like a thumb halfway up for me.
Cool. Well, that kind of sums up all of our thoughts on The Incredibles 2, Matt. And it was a lovely chat. Thank you for that.
Well, thank you.
And I apologise that the underminer's fucking causing havoc outside of my house.
Drilling in your backyard, yeah.
Yeah. We want to thank everyone for listening, please look forward to our next episode, which will be about Mission Impossible Fallout, which you might not know is the latest Mission Impossible film. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll see you all soon. Well, we won't see you. You'll hear us. But I like to imagine this, so I'll see you in my mind. None of you wear clothes, right? I'm pretty sure you're naked.
That stayed in the pod.